fabulous, fabulous Friday.
Yes, it is. I love when Friday rolls around, especially when it's summer. Time for Americanet Radio at 90.3 WHPC, folks. Thanks for tuning in and joining us. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, for the next hour. My lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales-Ryan, here as well. On Fridays, we've been doing a series that we call How Music Changed. I've been doing this forever now, really, with 250 hot topics that, if we get finished with all of them, would pretty much cover the entire history of popular music as I know it. There's the catchphrase, as I know it.
That's the caveat.
But it will take me about four lifetimes to get it all done. But I'm going to do my best. We're going to see what we can fit in. Now, we've been doing a series for the past considerably more than a half a year now. We've done 32 shows.
I thought you were going to say 30 years.
Maybe the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
But this series we call Transistor Days, and we've done 32 shows covering pop music from 1955, and we're going to take it up to the end of 1969. And after 32 shows, we are now exactly where we were last week, actually. We're still in the spring of 1965. If it takes two one-hour shows to cover the pop music of just one season,
it must have been good.
Yeah, you know we're in the middle of something. And this is the sweet spot for AM radio pop hits. 1965 was a glorious year. It took us two shows to do December, and it's going to take us two shows to do the spring. Expect the same for the summer, because 65 just never lets up. So not surprisingly, any year that requires 2 hours to cover the year's best pop music will certainly convey the brilliance and the importance of that year's pop music. And on top of that, few years offer more variety than 1965. The diversity of music in this particular show coming up should prove our point with relative ease, while also providing one of the single best episodes of music in this entire series. And that includes three great misses that I plan on playing. Three songs that I pretty much say are flat out awful. But today, it's almost impossible to imagine a time when pop music was this varied and awesome. So let's get to it right away. Up until this point, Heidi, I would say that in the past, since we covered 1964 until now, it seems as though the Beatles and the Supremes, or certainly Motown, figured prominently in every show. One song at minimum from each of them in just every show.
Oh, yeah, they were totally hot.
Right? Well, at this point, they still appear, but there's even more variety than what we would have seen on previous shows. For instance, we ended last week with the Supremes and their fifth consecutive number one hit, Back in My Arms Again. That's where we left off.
Right.
Well, we're picking up immediately with Motown once again. I mean, were they hot or what? Just as the Supremes back out of the number one spot on the national charts with
Who's Moving In?
Right. The Four Tops stood poised and ready with I Can't Help Myself. Back-to-back number one hits made Motown, everybody in the organization, really happy.
Yeah, they were proud.
Right? Of course. But none more so than the team of Eddie Holland, Lamont Dozier, and Brian Holland, who wrote and produced both of the records, those Supremes
hit
and the Four Tops hit.
They were hot.
Now, as is typical for the stuff that they wrote for the Supremes, the redundancy of the melody in this song coming up, you might not have ever noticed it. Listen to how it's the same phrase endlessly repeated. Da 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 da. It's just that almost nonstop. And that's so typical of Holland Dozier Holland's work. If these producers were capable of driving home a potent riff, these are the guys. They could yield an undeniably infectious number one hit record from nothing more than one simple idea repeated endlessly. There's no verse, no refrain, no bridge, not even a middle eight, unless you count the section where the band stops to sit on the opening chord of the extra bar. And that's where they say, when I call your name, girl, it starts to flame. That's the only time that the sing-songiness of the songwriting is broken. And most of us don't even notice that. It's just one of the best songs we've ever heard. And I really, to this day, it is still one of my all-time favorite pop songs. On America at Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here are the Four Tops with I Can't Help Myself. In some ways, I blame the Holland Dozier Holland team.
You blame them?
I blame them for like ruining my generation's ability to understand classical music properly. Because for centuries, people were writing songs where they would come up with all these fabulous parts and changes, and you would have songs that would go on for 15 minutes with very, very few lines repeating themselves. And it would require, you know, attentive listening.
Yes, some complex listening.
But you got a song like that, it's the same exact phrase, maybe 12 or 15 times in a row, and you never get tired of it because it's such a catchy. It's a killer hook. It's unbelievable. But you know, it's easy to get addicted to a hook. And that's what happened there, no doubt. Now, this next track, speaking of hooks, it's by a band called Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. I'm sure you heard of them.
Yeah.
This song was actually their first and their biggest hit of their entire career. I have a statistic here that I cannot say is absolutely true, but I'm reading it from Wikipedia that says this was the first American record to sell 1 million copies during the British invasion.
Huh.
Now, considering everything that was happening with Motown and such, I find that
hard to believe.
Yeah, maybe like a bit doubtful, but I have nothing that I can say to disprove it. And there it sits on Wikipedia, so there you go. Now, when Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs appeared, they were really a novelty band. They were mixing, you know, a deliberate touch of Tex-Mex nature to the song that was meant to give it some sort of a novelty edge around the country. In fact, even has a lot to do with like the songwriter, Sam Samudio, who happens to be Sam the Sham, of course, mm-hmm. When he counted the song in with uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro. You know, he meant it as a joke. But he says, this is his quote. He goes, the countdown part of the song was not planned. I was just goofing around and counting off in Tex-Mex. He goes, it just blew everybody away. And actually, I wanted it taken off the record. We did three takes. All of them were different, but they took the first take and released it as it was. That's pretty amazing. Now,
everybody always says, first take's the best one.
Song wasn't even really their own. There was a song about 3 years earlier written by a group called Big Bow and the Arrows called Hully Gully Now. And Wooly Bully is just them changing Hully Gully to Wooly Bully. No joke. And then adding like the Tex-Mex feel. So it's not even necessarily an original song. But these days, does anybody know Hully Gully? I mean, honestly, it's like totally forgotten. I don't remember ever hearing it myself.
Oh, yeah.
But we all know that, you know, hey, let's not be L7.
Ha ha.
Let's not be square and big. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. Performing Wooly Bully on American at Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro. Watch it now, watch it, watch it, watch it.
Song's pretty awesome.
It's definitely a way to get a party started.
I do not have that original version of the song Hully Gully. I just look. I have a version of it, though. The Beach Boys included it on their party album.
Ah.
And I heard that, but I guess I never even equated that with something that was a hit that became Wooly Bully. But there it is.
Yep.
That's what I should have known, but I didn't. All right. Moving on.
Never too old to learn.
Here's with a variety. Now, this you're going to see what I mean by variety, because there's so much about this show that's about variety. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. And that takes us into Tom Jones.
Yeah, now, baby.
For all the disenfranchised older fans who were feeling left out by the sudden influx of androgynous looking long haired bands, Tom Jones stood out like a beacon. Sexy, cool, hip and a sophisticated way. He was, in a sense, a replacement for the fading Elvis Presley. He was a celebrity who was basically among the establishment, providing a tonic for those who were fearing the change.
Chicks were digging him.
Absolutely. Now, his career really wasn't going anywhere for the longest time until his manager, Gordon Mills, wrote a song for him called It's Not Unusual. His manager wrote the song? No, that's a good manager.
Right.
I never had a manager like that.
I'm going to write you a hit.
It's incredible. Mind that. So the song unapologetically flaunts a big Las Vegas-style arrangement that shows off his tenor with a confident swagger. Now, this would come in handy when he later became one of the most in-demand performers on the Las Vegas dinner club circuit. So one of the sexiest men alive in 1965. Here's Tom Jones on American Net Radio, 90.3 WHPC with It's Not Unusual.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry. I wanna die. It's not unusual to go out at any time. But when I see you out and about, it's such a crime. If you should ever wanna be loved by anyone, it's not unusual, it happens every day. No matter what you say, you'll find it happens all the time. Love will never do what you want to do. Why can't this crazy love be more? It's not unusual to be mad with anyone. It's not unusual to be sad with anyone. But if I ever find that you've changed at any time, it's not unusual to find that I'm in love with you. Oh, 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 oh.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Pretty awesome. Now, up to this point, of course, you can tell that the amount of classic songs, songs that are still played significantly on the radio, whether really everything we've just played, I think, you know, Wooly Bully is timeless, right? It's not unusual. Timeless. I Can't Help Myself. Timeless. Well, now we get to the very dated part of the show. I want to play two misses back to back. This is the point where talentless incompetence becomes squared and multiplied to such a level that it boggles my ability to even comprehend how stupid this situation had gotten. Now, it starts, the first song is by Freddie and the Dreamers. Now, Freddie and the Dreamers are one of the goofier bands that came across on the British invasion on the backs of the Beatles. Literally, they basically held on for dear life as they crossed the Atlantic, probably. And they had a hit that most people remember called I'm Telling You Now, a rather dumb song. I guess likable enough.
Yeah.
But I'm not, that's not my great miss. I'm not here to pick on I'm Telling You Now. This is 1965. So they're hanging on, like I said, to try to retain their relevance. Now, the lead singer of Freddie and the Dreamers was a guy named Freddie Garrity. He was a little guy, about 5'3". And to make up, to compensate for his lack
stature.
Well, that and his lack of good looks, his more or less, you could say, lack of talent, any significant ability, while he was standing up front singing, he would go into this really weird spastic dance where he would just throw his arms and his legs all over the place while he sang. And if you ever see footage of it, it's really embarrassing to see somebody who's over 6 years old doing this while he's performing rock and roll.
It worked when he was six.
Yeah, it worked great when he was six. It was fine. But when you see it in an eight-year-old, you'd be saying, you're a little too old for that, I think. By the time you're in your 20s and you're on national television and that becomes your shtick, it hurts. So it was already a bad idea when you'd see him singing I'm Telling You Now and doing that nonsense dance on TV. And you'd say, he's got to be kidding, right? And eventually you would kind of lose interest because you want to talk about a one-trick pony or somebody who's only capable of doing one thing. Forget it. Well, his idea of a follow-up was to write a song about his spastic dance.
Nice.
And he wrote a song called Do the Freddy.
Nice.
Unbelievable. True. The song came out, as I said, in the spring of 1965, like everything May. It went to number 18, simply on the back of the fact that it was part of the British invasion and people were still maybe betting on the fact that Freddie and the Dreamers maybe had some credibility left in them. They were wrong. So that's the first miss.
Management should have broke it to them.
Now comes the part where that ineptitude and lack of talent gets squared. Multiplied infinitely by none other than Chubby Checker.
Oh, dear.
Who has also been struggling to retain his relevance. His ego got so big that he would go around telling people that he was more popular than the Beatles and that he was a better musician than any of the Beatles and that he's more relevant than the Beatles.
Wow.
But by 1965, he was having a pretty hard time proving that because the Beatles got consistently,
consistently and exponentially better.
Exponentially better as time went by.
They got exponentially better than themselves, never mind Chubby Checker.
Right, right. The growth was astounding. And Chubby Checker was disappearing from the charts. So his idea of trying to compete is to do his own version of Do the Freddy.
Again.
Only,
no.
Yeah, I swear to God, he releases a song, but he calls it Let's Do the Freddy, where he does a mock-up version of the real, unbelievably painful song by Freddie and the Dreamers.
Whoa.
And it went top 40. It made number 40. But I'm going to say I think it's probably the worst and one of the funniest songs of our great misses in this entire series. So back to back for you. Freddie and the Dreamers and Chubby Checker, both of them doing the Freddie on American at Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Hear the happy feet dancing to the beat of the Freddie. Put a guy in front, make a line in back, then you're ready. Move your head both ways like you see me do. Then jump, repeat, to the swinging beat. To the Freddy.
Freddy.
To the Freddy.
Freddy.
Kick your feet up. Your arms up to move your head both ways.
on, be honest. Wasn't it worth it to hear that?
That was awesome in its terribleness.
I mean, that was springtime for Hitler bad.
Oh, it was, yeah. Kill me now.
You know, there's a lesson to be learned here. If you're going to steal, steal from the best. That's the expression.
Right.
Don't go to the bottom of the...
of the well.
The shallow end of the pool. Oh, boy. Okay.
Don't go to the bottom of the swamp.
To which, by the way, it applies very much so to our next track. This song was, you know this, Heidi, of course, it's a song about a parade collision between two tribes of Mardi Gras Indians. It was originally called Giacomo by a band called Sugar Boy and His Cane Cutters. Mm. That was a hit back in the early 50s, actually. And it's pretty commonly known around New Orleans.
Yeah.
Not much anywhere else. But the Dixie Cups, the girls who sang Chapel of Love, had a big hit with that. We're back in New York City recording studio to record some sort of a follow-up, trying to find something. And when they're in there, they're standing around trying to come up with just ideas. And they literally have drumsticks in their hands, and there's an aluminum chair around them, around where the microphone is.
Uh-huh.
So they start banging on the aluminum chair, and they start singing Giacomo.
Uh-huh.
My flag boy and your flag boy, sitting by the fire. They're just riffing on a song that they know by memory.
Childhood
memories, right. They end up recording the song using like an aluminum chair. Somebody else is holding an ashtray. And a Coke bottle. They're just banging on these three things with their sticks while they sing. Then the bass player joins in, just plucking a note. Boom, boom, boom. That's the whole song. That's it. They stole from the best because it ended up becoming a huge hit. To this day, one of the most important songs at Mardi Gras time is when the Dixie Cups version of this song comes up. They did get sued for it, and there was a settlement. It's kind of complicated. I don't really know who gets what, and I don't even think any of the participants knew. But the song is still credited to the Dixie Cups with their version. So hopefully it's a happy ending all around. Happy for me, because this is...
I love the song.
Definitely one of my favorite Mardi Gras songs every single time I hear it. On American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here are the Dixie Cups with Aiko Aiko.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, henna, henna. Aiko Aiko Ande, Giacomo Fino Anale, Giacomo Finale. Look at my king all dressed in red. Aiko, Aiko, one day. I bet you $5 he'll kill you dead. Giacomo Finale. Talking about henna, 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 henna. Aiko, Aiko, one day. Giacomo Fino, Anande. Giacomo Finale. My flag boy and your flag boy sitting by the fire. My flag boy to your flag boy, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, 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 henna. Aiko, Aiko, Ande. Giacomo Fino, Anande. Giacomo Finale. See that guy all dressed in green. Aiko, Aiko, Ande. He's not a man, he's a loving machine. Giacomo Finale. Talking about henna, 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 henna. Aiko, Aiko, Ande. Giacomo Fino, Anande. Giacomo Finale. Talking about henna, henna, henna. Aiko, Aiko, Ande. Giacomo Fino, Anande. Giacomo Finale. Giacomo Finale.
What's amazing about it is not even a student of New Orleans culture as well versed as Dr. John could tell you what Giacomo Finale is.
Yeah.
Just basically something that was derived and became syllabic, and that's that.
Right.
Just all there is to it. essentially it is about Mardi Gras Indians meeting on the streets, where spy boys who would run basically run ahead of his own Indian tribe, looking for other Indian tribes to right. provoke them, to set off a contest. And if they found them, he would approach, they would have a flag boy, and he was threatening to set the flag on fire. You know, that's the confrontation that would hit. And then basically the competition would start. All right.
Bob Dylan. Boys were also known as spy boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan up now. And in 1965, boy, the things that folk music had gone through by this point in time, if you could even call Bob, well, that's just it. By 1965, you couldn't call Bob Dylan a folk artist really anymore.
Because he's already electric.
They didn't want to call him a folk artist anymore for that reason.
Folkies,
I mean,
didn't want him.
You got to think, like, the history of this music, it started very political with the Weavers and the Kingston Trio singing Tom Dooley and Woody Guthrie and Lead Belly. Especially Woody Guthrie and Lead Belly. But Senator Joseph McCarthy changed American music drastically, and all for the worse, by basically making everybody who sang political music out to be a communist.
Right.
So all the music immediately had to get softened into sort of nothing, because people were being threatened and having their careers ruined on blacklists. So the spine of the folk music kind of vanished, and it didn't reappear much until Dylan appeared in 62 and became, well, he appeared even earlier than that, but in 63 when he began to become famous, writing lyrics that were once again challenging and politically charged. And he became the biggest hero in the world to the folkies. But when he heard the English bands playing this refreshing and invigorating brand of rock and roll, he liked it and sensed that he needed to embrace it. Confirmation came when he heard the Animals' version of House of the Rising Sun, which he also recorded on his own very first album. Not to mention, you know, the Birds, who would eventually be, you know, with chiming 12-string guitars from Mr. Tambourine Man. I mean, all of this stuff basically led Dylan to say, I got to get me a guitar player. I got to get me a band. And when he found Mike Bloomfield, he sure as heck did get one.
Yeah.
But this is the song that pretty much alienated him from his traditional fan base. He plugged in. Subterranean Homesick Blues has lyrics that are about as interpretable as the song's title. And boy, oh boy, did they ever get up the dander of his previous supporters. Didn't matter. Rock and roll kids loved it, ate it up. Huge top 40 hit for Bob Dylan on American Radio, 90.3 WHBC. Here's Subterranean Homesick Blues.
John is in a basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on a pavement thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, bad job laid off, says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10. Maggie comes Fleetfoot, face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the men say they must bust an early man. Orders from the DA, look out, kid, don't matter what you did. But walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash your plain clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Get sick, get well, hang around the inkwell, hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna sell. Try hard, get bought, get back, ride rail, get jailed, jump bail, join the army if you fail. Look out, kid, you're gonna get hit by losers, cheaters, six-time users, hanging around the theaters. Girl by the whirlpools looking for a new fool, don't follow leaders, or watch your parking meter. Oh, get born, keep warm, short pants, romance. Learn to dance, get dressed, get blessed. Try to be success, please her, please him. Buy gifts, don't steal, don't live. 20 years of schooling and they put you on the day shift. Look out, kid, they keep it all hid. Better jump down a manhole, light yourself a pen. Don't wear sandals and try to forge the scandals. Don't want to be a bum, you better chew gum. The pump don't work cause the vandals took the handle.
Two Bob Dylan songs back to back there, of course, Subterranean Homesick Blues, followed by the electric version of Mr. Tambourine Man by The Byrds. Both of those songs on the charts simultaneously, something that's not talked about much. Helping Dylan to venture across the electric fence and into the realm of rock and roll. All right, next track. The Rolling Stones were the first real English rock and roll band to earn as much authority as the Beatles, but their recognition as such came very slowly. They began with the intention of duplicating American blues and felt little need to write their own material. This is Mick Jagger's quote in about 1964. "After all, can you imagine a British-composed R&B number?" Times had changed. While the Stones were touring America for the very first time, Keith Richards, the guitarist, woke up in the middle of the night with an idea in his head. He grabbed a tape recorder and an acoustic guitar that he had at his bedside. He recorded himself as he plucked out da-da-da-da-da and moaned, "I can't get no satisfaction." Then he fell back asleep. He gave this tiny little fragment of a bit to Mick Jagger, who wrote lyrics about American consumerism as he was witnessing it for the very first time. Richards added to the song's perverse appeal by when he stumbled upon a fuzz box that was in the recording studio. He had no didn't know what it was until he walked in to plug in and record the song.
Wow.
And decided to give it a go. It sounded like an amplified buzzsaw.
Right.
They figured that they had themselves maybe a B-side, something that they could bury on an album. They weren't that confident of their songwriting ability at this point yet, really. And Keith argued adamantly against releasing it as a single, feeling that it just didn't measure up to what he heard in his head, what he hoped the song would be. I guess he can sleep easier now and not worry about it. On American at Radio, 90.3 WHPC, what is one of the most played songs of all time? "I Can't Get No Satisfaction."
We'll be right back. give you diamonds bright. There'll be days that will excite and make you dream of me at night.
After the Rolling Stones, that was the Yardbirds with their first top 10 hit here in the United States. It was written by Graham Goldman of 10cc. You figured everybody would be really happy about the fact that they got on the top 10, but Eric Clapton was in that band and he quit immediately afterward because he disapproved of the band becoming a pop band.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
Times have changed.
Right. I got one more great miss for you. It's by a guy named Ian Whitcomb. And all I can say, he eventually went on to become a respected writer. Some music history books. I've read some of his book. He is a good writer. I'm not so sure about him as an artist, though, because I definitely have him chosen for one of my great misses on American
Hit
Radio, 90.3 WHBC. Here's You Turn Me On. All right, no more great misses, I promise. We only have time for two anyway. So I'm going to play them back to back because we're talking about the diversity of music at this point in time. And the last two songs, I think, do a great job of summing that up. First up is a song that's coming from a new record company in the South that is starting to give Motown a run for its money. Nobody knew that it would really do exactly that. We're talking about the Stax Vault operation out of Memphis. The song was written by Otis Redding and Jerry Butler. Of course, it's got Steve Cropper on guitar, so it's got all of the signpost elements that made Stax Vault such an amazing label as it developed. That track is Otis Redding with I've Been Loving You Too Long. And we're going to follow that with them featuring Van Morrison, a very young Van Morrison, with a song that was written by their producer, Burt Burns. Got them. They actually got Jimmy Page to play guitar on their song. So you can compare Steve Cropper to Jimmy Page on some hits from the 60s.
Very cool.
Back to back on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. Thank you so much for listening, folks. And we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend.
I've been loving you too long to stop now. And you want to be free. My love has grown stronger as you become a habit to me. Ooh, I'm loving you too long. I don't want to stop now. With you, my life has been so wonderful. I can't stop now. You're tired, and your love is growing. As our affair grows old, I've been loving you, oh, too long, to stop now, oh, 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 I've been loving you. I don't want to stop now. Oh, oh, don't make me stop now. Oh,
wonder what is wrong with me. Why can I accept the fact she's chosen him and simply let them be? Whoa, 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 well, here it comes.
Here comes the night. Here comes the night.
Oh, 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 yeah. The way I used to do. I could see her closing her eyes and telling her lies exactly like she told me to.